Good morning. It is indeed a pleasure and an honor to be here today, and I am very grateful to the committee for asking me to be here, for Michelle extending the invitation and this opportunity. My name is Mike, and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May the 10th of 2000. That may not sound like much to you, but it's a miracle to me. And I have a home group, the Prattville Downtown Group in Prattville, Alabama. It is my honor and privilege to be speaking with you today. Alcoholics Anonymous has a beginning when Bill met Dr. Bob. And it's all about relationships and continuing those relationships. They met in June of 1935. We celebrate that event and the growth of AA today with gratitude. We also stand in unity, recovery, and service, dedicated to preserving the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, how do we do that? Very simply, as archivists, we preserve the material and substance out of which AA emerged and continues, true to the most basic principles of honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. Just as we must give away to keep, we must seek the materials of history in order to share it and preserve it. The theme of this meeting, Archives, a Collective Vision, is most appropriate and reminds us that we can do together what I cannot do alone. Today, in this talk, we're going to look at five themes, moving quickly through them. One is a little of my professional background. The second is what archivists do and the difference between archives and special collections. The third is perceiving archives from a professional and non-professional perspective. The fourth is the purpose of archives in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the fifth is the Area One archives in the present and a vision for that archives in the future. Now, from my professional background, I've worked at the Alabama Department of Archives and History, a state agency, for over 29 years, primarily in collections management, but also in records management. And I have a couple of history degrees to go with that. At various times, I oversaw the arrangement and description and collections management of special collections, which consists of about 10,000 cubic feet of records, then government record archives, which consisted of about 30,000 cubic feet of records. Now, let's look at what archivists do. Archivists use the concept of the life cycle. In its simplest form, the life cycle refers to the creation, use, and disposition of a record. Now, 90 to 95% of the records that are created will eventually be disposed of. That is, they're not kept permanently after a specified period of time. And that's the key point, to specify the period of time we're going to keep them before we don't need them anymore. For example, most receipts are kept from 1 to 3 years and then recycled. Now, let's talk about that other 5 to 10% that we're trying to keep. And here's what the archivist does with that. First, we identify and acquire records, papers, artifacts, audiovisual materials, photographic and electronic materials of enduring value. Now, enduring value means they have one or more of three different kinds of... Am I talking too loud? Talk into the microphone. So materials that document the evidential value... This way? Closer. Okay, materials. There we go. Of course, I can't tell. Thank you. Yeah. So let's step up one little bit. Archivists identify and acquire records, papers, artifacts, audiovisual materials, photographic, and electronic materials of enduring value. That means they have evidential, informational, or intrinsic value. Evidential value is materials that document organization, functions, policy, actions, and decisions, like organizational charts, minutes, and strategic plans. The more formal definition is the quality of records that provide information about the origins, functions, and activities of their creator. Typically, then, evidential value relates to the process of creation rather than content or informational value of records. And, for example, our conference charter would be evidential value. Informational value is materials that document people, places, things, and events, such as student newspapers or our district newspapers, census data, Sanborn maps, diaries, correspondence, audits, and reports. That is, they have information about things in them. This is known as research or reference value. In other words, what information is contained in this item? For us, for example, that would be Bill W.'s correspondence. Intrinsic value is that materials linked with fame, an important event, artistic merit, uniqueness of format, or high monetary value, like the Declaration of Independence, glass plate negatives, items with a signature or annotations made by a famous person. For us, that could be Bill W. or Dr. Bob, among others. Now, the second thing we do is arrange, describe, and preserve archival materials. I'm not going to go any further into that. It takes too long. And finally, we make archival materials available and accessible to patrons and our institutional constituencies, both physically and intellectually. So we provide reference service, outreach, and education. Let's take a look now at the difference between records and special collections in the archives. Records are materials, regardless of format, created by an institution, corporation, or government agency. For example, the University of Washington, United States Steel, the State of Georgia, or Alcoholics Anonymous. The traditional title is archivist. Records are traditionally housed in an archives and are kept to meet the needs and operations of the creating organization. So for us at Area 1, which is Alabama and Northwest Florida, we would keep the records to document what we did as an area to in service to Alcoholics Anonymous. So this is part of preserving the institutional memory of the organization. Special collections are everything else, and typically are kept to foster the study of the subject about which the repository collects. In this case, it would be obviously alcoholism and Alcoholics Anonymous. The traditional title is curator, archivist, or librarian. These can be manuscript collections from an individual or family. In the case of Area 1, they can be publications of any type about Alcoholics Anonymous, addiction or Al-Anon, the Oxford Group, and many other related topics. For example, we have books, magazines, newspaper articles, newscasts, and other publications. All these types of material are part of the Area 1 special collections of the Area 1 archives. And there are a couple of sources that you can check. The Council of State Archivist has a resource that can be used, and the Northeast Document Conservation Center has a number of preservation leaflets that are really helpful in this area. And the Society of American Archivists was founded in 1936, and it's the oldest and largest national archival professional organization. There's also numerous regional archival organizations that are usually less expensive and easier to get to, such as the Midwest Archivist Conference, the Mid-Atlantic Regional Archivist Conference, Society of California Archivists, Society of Southwest Archivists, and the Conference of Intermountain Archivists. So if you live in a region like the South that doesn't have a strong multi-state regional organization, your state probably has a state organization. Very briefly, what's the purpose of archives and Alcoholics Anonymous? The AA guidelines on archives states, like any other AA service, the primary purpose of those involved in archival work is to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. Archive service work is more than mere custodial activity. It is the means by which we collect, preserve, and share the rich and meaningful heritage of our fellowship. It is by the collection and sharing of these important historical elements that our collective gratitude for Alcoholics Anonymous is deepened. And on the AA website, there are a number of resources that can be used related to archives and Alcoholics Anonymous. In addition to that, Here's a couple of other areas. One is the National AA Archives Workshop, which has a website, and they are really, really useful information and a great, great resource. And the AA History Lovers Listserv, which documents not only AA history, but also archival activity as well. Now, let's get down to what I consider the heart of the matter for me, which is the Area 1 Archives, our mission and activities. Our mission statement is, it is the mission of the Area 1 Archives to collect, preserve, research, and display the records and artifacts of continuing value to Area 1. And having a mission statement helps helps us to focus on what we're actually supposed to be doing. The Archives Committee structure consists of the following. There are trusted servants, including a chairperson, alternate chair, secretary, and display coordinator, all of whom rotate every 2 years, and there's an archivist who is non-rotating, as well, of course, as members consisting of district archivists, district committee members, and all those interested in service work in AA archives and history. And if you're in Area 1, I urge you to join us. We can use the help. Now, the Archives Committee functions include preserving and making available archives and special collections, providing workshops, training, and consultation to district and group archives and archivists, creating traveling exhibits from the collections, creating exhibits from area assembly, from the area archives, encouraging districts to create exhibits for the Area 1 assembly held each quarter, and listening to ideas and concerns. The Area 1 Archives is housed in a secure 10-foot by 20-foot climate-controlled commercial storage facility. The records are housed on shelves and boxes in a 10 by 12 area, leaving a 10 by 8 area for display purposes. The Area 1 Archives currently holds 207.7 cubic feet of records and special collections, with room for at least 100 more cubic feet if the display area is reduced. A general breakdown of our holdings reveals the following. In special collections, we have big books, first through fourth editions. We have four first editions, 16 second editions, which is every printing, 74 third editions, several fourth editions, 8 autographed editions, and 40 foreign editions, which total about 20 cubic feet. We have other Alcoholics Anonymous World Service books like the 12 and 12, the Daily Reflections, AA Comes of Age, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, amounting to over 60 cubic feet. In most cases, the archives has many printings of these books. And we also have AAWS pamphlets, workbooks, and other literature going back to the 1950s. Grapevines going into the 1940s, and Grapevine publications. We also have literature about AA or alcoholism, about 10 cubic feet of that, and literature about Al-Anon as well, about 5 cubic feet of that. Now, some specific examples of special collections items, a handmade circle and triangle out of wood as an artifact, a big book, first edition, third printing of June 1942. We have a button, a lapel button saying no thanks and be a designated driver. One of our foreign big books is written in Farsi for Persia, so we have 3 cubic feet of foreign language big books. In addition, one of my favorite artifacts is Chug-a-Lug, the drinking party game, as if we needed it. That's one I never had a problem with, and a book by Frank Buckman dedicated to Frank Buchman called 80 by his friends. In archives, we include records of our Area 1 assembly, including AA conferences, trusted servants attended, trusted servant records, including the delegate, alternate delegate, chairperson, secretary, treasurer, and registrars, and committee records from all our committees, which I won't name. And we also have some district records as well, as ephemera and artifacts. Some examples of archival records include March 27, 2009, Area 1 Assembly Agenda, a document recording all the motions made to the Assembly, a 1961 March 4th telegram announcing the AA in the South anniversary, cassette tapes of a cooperation with professional community workshop, delegates reports, programs from the 1950s, and other areas. Let me briefly talk about financing. The Area 1 Assembly pays 100% of the cost of our storage facility, and we moved into that particular space in 2013. From 2002, we had a 10x10 store space in the same facility, which is climate control. So what are we doing now? The Area 1 Archives Committee is collecting archival records and special collections, assisting district archives and group archives in starting and maintaining their archives according to their mission statement, and whatever we possibly can over the phone and personal one-to-one visits, and we try and be as useful as possible to our trusted servants. So we have work days and prepare traveling exhibits and other types of exhibits. In planning for the Area 1 Archives in the future, obviously we want to recruit more folks to help us make this stuff more available. That's always a constant need. We want to find a more permanent home for the Area 1 Archives and appropriately house all the items and archival folders and boxes on steel shelving. We want to have a detailed inventory of our holdings and begin cataloging them, preparing more displays, getting our area website involved. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm one of those people that has this great, gigantic vision, but then I have to deal with reality. So we're going to do what we can do. We're going to enjoy it and have a good time. And I just want to say we got plenty to do, and we all want to be as useful as we possibly can. Thank you for letting me share.
Thanks, Mike. He's the real deal. He's going to borrow from him. Does anybody hear this cheering going on? I think they're having more fun in that room over there than we are, so let's let them know we're having fun in here, too. Yay! Woo! Woo! All right. Well, my ears. I couldn't help but think he was talking about big books, and I remember this doctor once called me up. He had about 6 months of sobriety, and he had bought his first edition big book, and he said he had reached another dimension. I believe it was the fourth. And I remember saying to him, well, most of us get there by reading it, not owning it. So I've come to believe that our displays, you know, we have a job to do, and it's under our traditions, and it's to carry the message. And you don't always need a lot of stuff to do that. It's the beautiful story that God gave us of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I started out, all I had was the pictures from the archives. And I thought, I needed that big book. It wasn't going to be in archives without it. And I was wrong. What's so important is our history. It's the oral histories. It's taking a time to have a cup of coffee and sitting down with an old timer and getting his story. Today, it's more about the story for me than anything. And we have a responsibility because it's an oral tradition. We get sober on this story. I remember being on the streets of San Diego during our international convention, and I met Vladimir from Russia. And I remember him saying, I said, well, how's it going over there? And this was several years ago. And he said, oh, it's going pretty well. We're expanding. He said, but we don't use your stories. And I said, why not? And he said, to us, they read like fairy tales. And then I, like we do this weekend, walk down the street and you meet somebody from another country and they share another story. And then you bump into somebody else, and then all of a sudden it dawned on me, we're just a story. And we're the keepers here of the story. And the big book is just a story of the history of Alcoholics Anonymous with stories in it. So I think what's more important than all of our inventories and everything is protecting and caring for the beautiful story of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you. I'm allowed to talk in between. My next speaker is a dear friend, because he came walking into the archives one day in Akron, and they warned people to stay away from me because the next thing you know, you'll have a service position in AA. And I'll let Theron tell you all about that. Theron?
Hi, everybody. My name is Theron Brayman. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 7th, 1992, and my home group is the primary purpose group in Portland, Oregon. And I'm glad to see some friends here from Michigan, too. Appreciate you coming and supporting me for this. Some years ago, I had the opportunity to come to Atlanta. It's a great city, isn't it? Vibrant and all kinds of stuff going on. Only this was before I sobered up, and they wanted to relocate my whole department here. And I knew that all y'all down here were real heavy drinkers, and that was going to be a problem for me because y'all were going to lead me astray. And so I turned down the job move, and I stayed in Ohio. And guess what? I hit bottom anyway. But at least it was someplace familiar. So I'm glad to be back here under better circumstances. I'd like to thank the convention committee and Gail for inviting me to participate in this. This is a topic that's very near and dear to my heart. As Gail said, I first became interested in AA archives. It was about 1996, I think. And I'd been sober for like all of 3 years, so I had this whole thing knocked. I had it down pat, and I was taking fiddle lessons in downtown Akron, and I saw the sign for the Akron Intergroup office. I thought, oh, I'll go in, you know, see what maybe I can explain to them or something. And they said, oh, we got an archives in the back. It's pretty new, and the archivist is in today. Would you like to see it? Oh, yeah, that'd be cool. So there was an attractive young woman there, which always caught my attention. And she gave me the tour of the archives, and she did it in a way that really had terrific impact, not just for the dates, but who the people were and how the spiritual principles had come together in Akron at the right time to save us hopeless alcoholics. And I thought, oh, this is terrific. And she said, you know, we have a real need here in archives because a lot of the materials here are acidic and they're deteriorating. And I said, oh, I know all about that. I'm a chemist. And she said, oh, really? Oh, really? And anybody who knows Gail, you know she's a terrific recruiter. So being a chemist, I wound up in the conservation end of this thing. And I got some training from Bob W. from Little Rock, who was good enough to come up. And some of you probably know Bob. So I spent a couple of years cleaning and deacidifying and encapsulating materials in a rather dingy back room in the Akron Archives. But it was really slow going because I found everything I was working on was so fascinating that I had to read it all before I could treat it. And Gail was very kind about that. She said, you know, we need to kind of move this along. I remember, well, the committee meetings that we had with the Archives Committee and Gail's insistence that we're going to adhere to the traditions regardless of what our individual wants and our preferences were. Because I came to, I think, my first one there, I'd been reading about grant applications and that kind of thing. I said, oh, I got this great idea. This is an educational thing here, right? And there's government grants for education. And she said, that's nice. Why don't you go read the traditions, Theron? But her leadership in applying the traditions to everything that we do has really stuck with me. And I try to remember that when challenging situations and questions come up. So sometime later, I took a career move to Michigan. This career move turned out okay because it was for better reasons and I'd been sober for a while. And I dropped out of archives work for a little while, but then the trusted servants, a couple of the trusted servants from Area 32 up there in central Michigan, asked me to start an archives and an archives committee because they didn't have one. Area 32 had a collector who they were thinking of as the archivist, but he would bring his personal collection to meetings and take it around and display it, but he was a collector. And so it eventually came to a realization that we don't own any of our own history in this area. So they asked me to start that up, and I got together with this collector who had gotten on all the mailing lists for committee minutes and that kind of thing. So he had his own personal copies, and we proceeded to scan about 20 boxes of documents. We still in Area 32 do not have a physical repository, but now we at least have digital copies of our history that we own ourselves. And so the relationship with this collector was complicated and somewhat fraught. He was a nice guy. I count him as a friend. I hope he thinks of me as a friend. But we had to work through what is archives and what is collection, and we'll get to that in a little bit. Now I have retired from my paying career. Woohoo! And I'm newly transported to Oregon. And so, of course, as soon as I got there, I looked up the Area 58 archives and our local district archives. And I walked in and I said, "Hi, you know, I'm new here. Is there anything I can do?" And he said, "Oh, yeah, sure. I think we can find something." So I'm still active in this thing. I'm no longer the archives chair for Michigan, but I'm weaseling my way into archives stuff in Portland now. So what is my take on this collective vision thing? Well, in going through this process, I tried to fall back to the way Gail taught me, look at the traditions, and to look at the other principles of our program, and not just my personal opinions, although those may creep in here a little bit. So first I'd like to set the stage with a little background. Many of you remember when the first National AA Archives Workshop happened in Akron. That was in 96. There was a great deal of sharing, and it was kind of the first awareness, I think, of all the AA archivists getting together and saying, "Wow, there's more than one. We're not alone. We're a community." By the third workshop in 98, it had become apparent to everybody that this community needed to have some guidelines. And although we were nearly thrown out of the hotel for setting off the smoke detectors over and over again, I remember that clearly, and the fire department had to show up several times. By Saturday night, you remember that. By Saturday night, the assembled attendees crammed all into one little stuffy room and voted that we were going to ask the General Service Conference for a Committee on Archives and some guidelines, and that we were going to continue this archives workshop thing on an annual basis, and that it wasn't going to happen in Akron anymore because we were tired of doing this, all the setting up the chairs. So that's been 19 years since the beginning of that community. We now have the AA guidelines on archives and the guidelines on conservation from GSO. We have the support and encouragement of the GSO archivist. Hi, Michelle. And we have more and more active archives committees at the area, district, and intergroup levels. We have the continuing national workshops, which have also inspired local and regional workshops to spread the interest in archives and AA history. And through information sharing among the community, we have a much better awareness of good archival practices and conservation techniques. So, where do we go from here? How do we continue to grow in service and effectiveness? How do we kick this up a notch? I would like to suggest a general approach that we can adopt that already has some familiar aspects, and then several specific areas to consider. In all our work, of course, we need to be guided by an informed group conscience. So our committees are the places to discuss this stuff. And remember that these are only my suggestions, so take what you want and leave the rest. Alcoholics Anonymous is a program for changing our lives, for improving ourselves, and through the application of some simple principles. And after a long career in a large corporation, I've seen some of these same principles in organizational improvement programs. And I've become a big believer in the power of these continuous improvement processes. It's my hope for the AA Archives that we can think seriously about applying some of the principles of the continuous improvement processes to our activities. In big corporations, these kind of programs come around every few years, and you kind of get cynical about it. But they really do work if you buy into them and apply them wholeheartedly. And the basic elements of these things, regardless of what flavor it is, whether it's ISO 9000 or continuous improvement or quality process, the basic principles are, first of all, you make a written plan. You decide what it is you're going to do, and maybe even write down how you're going to do it. The second is you go ahead and you carry out this plan. You go and you do the activities that you've probably been doing all along, but maybe hadn't been real specific about how or which. The third principle is you periodically check your results and see, are you getting the results that you wanted to get? And then the fourth is that you revise the plan based on what you saw in your checking. If you aren't quite getting what you wanted, you make some adjustments. This sounds familiar. In fact, this sounds like the way the big book suggests that I conduct my day, that I start out the morning by reviewing the day ahead and asking for some guidance and strength. That's making a plan. And then I go out and I do my activities, trying to stick to those principles. And then at the end of the day, I review what happened and see what I might need to improve on tomorrow. So this made it into corporate improvement plans, I think beginning in the 50s with Deming. So I think he stole it from AA. But anyway, this is the plan, do, check, act cycle, which will be familiar to anybody that's been in a big corporation for a while. So how does this apply to archives? Well, we already have a basic goal statement, carry this message, right? How an archives carries that out needs to be maybe made a little more specific. We can have written guidelines, and the GSO guidelines are very helpful as a starting point. A mission statement, and as Bob was talking about, a collection scope that helps keep us on track. What is it we're really trying to do here? What's important to us? And rather than trying to collect everything that comes our way. Second is carrying this out. Most organizations are pretty good at carrying out what they do. They've been doing it for a long time. But writing it down is helpful, particularly in our kinds of situations when we have rotating committee members and new volunteers. Writing down our procedures is helpful. Like, for example, how a new acquisition is processed. An archivist that's been doing it for a long time, it's probably second nature. If you want to have people helping you, you want to spell these things out. We also have in AA a process for checking our results. As I said, you know, in my personal life, I do that at the end of the day or during the day as a spot check inventory. We have for our groups, we have group inventory. And the group inventory questions, many of them are helpful for archives, but I think we can tailor that to be specific to what we do. So some of the things we could ask ourselves are we protecting anonymity adequately? Are we carrying the message as defined in our mission statement? And finally, we need to look at those and figure how can we improve our process to do these things. Now, I'd like to have a couple of minutes to offer some specific examples, some specific suggestions. First one is let's be friendly with our friends. Sounds familiar? The GSO guidelines suggest that as archivists, we join local archives organizations. And when I became the archives chair for Area 32, I realized, well, I knew all this conservation stuff. I didn't know beans about organizing an archives. So I joined the Michigan Society of Archivists. And guess what? They were really helpful. These people, they're cut from the same genetic stock as librarians. They want to help people find stuff. And although when I registered with them, I just registered as an individual contributor. Everybody wants to know, well, what group are you with? You know, what institution are you with? And I told them. And they were very helpful. They were very welcoming. They come from the kind of the same background that we do. They're working with limited budgets and technology. They have to oversee the acquisition, description, conservation, and display with limited education and help. They have to rely on untrained volunteers. They have to create meaningful programs that will raise awareness of whatever their particular area is. So they got a lot in common with us, and we can share and learn from them. Second topic is reviewing our focus. The most basic purpose of an archives is to retain and preserve the records and history of the organization it serves. For us, the fifth tradition also reminds us that the primary purpose is to carry the message. So, Gail always asked us in committee meetings, anything that we suggest, anything we wanted to do, how will this serve our primary purpose? How will this carry a message to the still suffering alcoholic? And I also like to try and keep in mind that every dollar we spend on archives is a dollar that's not going to be spent for big books for the prison meeting or that kind of thing. I'm not suggesting that we eliminate the archives budget, only that this is a good reason for us to stay really focused, to maximize the benefit to the fellowship. The GSO guidelines suggest a collection scope. And the scope is really helpful because we want to stay out of the what I think of as the collector mentality. For example, if I've got an interest in early AA pamphlets and I'm a collector, I want to get all the pamphlets that I can get from wherever they might be. If I'm the Area 32 archivist or archives chair, I don't care about pamphlets from Philadelphia. I don't care about pamphlets from Pittsburgh. You know, if I happen to get one, I'll send it to them. I want to just stick to my scope. I see a lot of archives where they have racks and racks of big books. Well, you know, we have every printing, every edition. How does this carry the message about your area? Now, if some of those are big books that have inscriptions from your old-timers in them, like I've got a big book from my first home group. When I left, everybody in the group signed it. Okay, that's got some history in it, because that's everybody that was in that group at that point in time. But I've seen, too, archivists, archives where they're very proud that they've got a complete selection of grapevines. What's the meaning of that? And when GSO has a complete selection of grapevines, you know, I can pay a few bucks and go online and search them. So why are we spending time on that in our local area? That's the collector mentality, to just get everything. The archivist mentality, I think, is what's specific to my organization, to the history of my area, and limit it to that so that I can be more focused. Because if I'm busy collecting grapevines, then I'm not recording oral histories of my old timers. And I'm not doing local group histories. And I'm not doing all this, putting all this stuff on display, so my traveling displays are things that local people can relate to and see how AA came to my area and how it spread and what we learned from our old timers. So, archivists and collectors. As I said, there's two different mentalities. And we've been friendly with collectors. Collectors have helped out various archives. They've donated. They've supported. The first archives workshop, the seed money, was offered by a well-known collector. But in some places, there's been lack of clarity as to who was what. We've had archivists who were collectors. We've had collectors who maybe it wasn't clear whether they were the archivist or not. And I think that needs to really be straightened out in order for potential donors to have trust in the archives. you're probably aware, I know I'm aware of some situations where something like an old big book was donated, thinking that it was going to the area archives, and instead it wound up with a collector. Now, once that gets around a few times, then people are not willing to donate to the area archives, and we start losing some stuff that, you know, an old timer passes away and his family pitches it in a dumpster. So what we need to do, I think, and this again is in line with the GSO guidelines, so there's a couple of things. We need to have a deed of gift that when someone gives us an item, we fill out the deed of gift, they sign it, it's clear to both parties that this is going to the archives. These are the conditions that are placed on it, if any. The archives now owns it. If we decide to deaccession it, that's included in there. And if there are copyrights that the donor owns, that they can transfer the copyright to the archives. The next thing is, GSO suggests keeping the archives in a rented space rather than in a member's basement or, the, worse yet, the trunk of his car. It's happened. Because then archives materials tend to get kind of mixed up with some other stuff. They can get commingled with private materials. When we go to conventions and workshops and those kinds of things, we need to be real clear who is displaying what. Some places will allow collectors to display, and I'm not going to argue for or against that, but it needs to be very clear whose materials are on display. This table is archives, and that table as archives should be not just, look at all the stuff we've got. It should be, here's the story that we're presenting about AA in our area. The other table for the collector, that can be, look at all the cool stuff I got. That's fine. That's the collector mentality. If I was a collector, that's what I'd do. But we need to be very clear in our minds about the differences there. We also, as archivists, and this is good archivist practice anyway, is we need to list the materials that we have in our archives. So it's very explicit what we have. This is a finding aid or an inventory, and it can be just as simple as a spreadsheet where you write the stuff down. I've seen electronic databases. We can make it a lot more complex, but a spreadsheet works just fine. Marking and or labeling, wherever possible, the stuff that belongs to the archives is real helpful. Using copies in our traveling displays rather than originals so that things don't tend to take legs and walk away or get intermingled with something else. All of these things help us to be clear in our communications and clear in our expectations about the difference between archivists and collectors. We can coexist. We just got to be clear in our minds and clear to everyone else about how we do that. Finally, I want to mention that copyright is something that we need to be very much aware of. You know that whoever has generated a document owns the copyright to it unless they specifically transfer that copyright. So we come into ownership of documents that we don't own the copyright for. And people may, collectors for example, may ask for copies of that. Oh, that's a great letter. Could I have a copy of that? Sorry, but I can't. I don't own the copyright. Private letters are copyrighted. And it's tempting to say, well, you know, who would know? Nobody would object. But the law says, I don't own the rights to it. I can't make a copy and give it away. I can make a backup copy for my own use for safety purposes, but I can't go spreading it around. On a practical level, too, if I give it to somebody else, I don't know what's going to happen to that. That could go out on the internet. So the fact that this is a law, I've kind of learned that it's not up to me to decide which laws are convenient for me to obey and which ones aren't. I've had that explained by officers and judges and finally had to come to accept that. So I suggest that we need to be very careful again in our relationship with collectors, that we not share things that we don't have a right to share. So I think I'm probably about out of time, but I want to emphasize that when we carry the message, it's important to me when I walk into a display to see something that I can relate to as I'm part of this process in my area. I'm part of this history. These are people that I can relate to and I can understand. And not just, well, look, we've got a complete rack of grapevines. So what? When I am in fit spiritual condition, I want to be of maximum usefulness to this fellowship and to God and to my fellow man. And I believe that that's what we all want for this fellowship and for our archives. And I hope you'll take some of these suggestions to your committees and think about them and see if we can't use some of these to improve our usefulness. So, thanks.
Wow, thank you, Theron. I think I'm going to buy this tape and listen to it again. Yeah, you talked about when we all come together, it's like supporting. It was like a support group, the National AA Archives workshop. I wasn't standing alone anymore. And I was thinking about and when you first came in, and then you left and went to Michigan, and I gave him a vitamin B3 pamphlet on niacin, because he was going to take it up there and conserve it and bring it back to us. And when he came back, I looked at him and I said, Theron, you look different. What's different about you? You look so different. He said, I read the pamphlet. I'm on niacin now and I look great. So you might want to start reading what you care for here, because it makes a difference. And everything we do teaches. When we see a table just full of books, that teaches that that's what archives is. And then when you see a beautiful display, then someone can see that carrying the message. And I always think of the new guy when he walks into the archives and he doesn't know the titles of all those books. Does he learn about the history of Alcoholics Anonymous? So display work can be some of the most important work you'll ever do. In fact, if you come to the Akron Archives, there are 26, I'm a school teacher, retired school teacher, A to Z, nothing but display, and walk you through the story of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's not one artifact or anything, and they leave knowing the beautiful story of AA. So thank you, Theron, for being such a beautiful example. And well, my next speaker, I remember him from Founders Day coming to the archives display, all lit up. And you're always lit up about AA. And I was thinking while I was sitting up here of Frank M., who followed Nell as our second archivist. And he said, archivists are like buttermilk drinkers. There's not too many people that love buttermilk, but when you love buttermilk, you really love buttermilk. And so we have a buttermilk drinker here who loves AA and is taking good care of the history in New Jersey. Lester, would you come up and tell us about that?
Love you, sir. Good afternoon. It is afternoon now. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Lester. My sobriety date is November 29th, 1985. My home group is Practice These Principles. We meet in Manalapan, New Jersey. And, you know, I wasn't really sure how to start this, but I'm going to start it just the way it started with me coming here. You know, the phone rang one day, and it was Michelle on the other end. And Michelle has called me several times in the past, you know, to ask me questions or just to share information or stuff like that. And halfway through her conversation, because she's never directly to the point, She said, well, I got you on the phone. I just want to ask, what do you think about speaking at the convention, doing an archives workshop? And I said, do you realize who you just called? And apparently she did. But I, you know, it took me back a little bit because I just wasn't expecting it. And I was just, I got to tell you, it's an honor and a privilege, you know, to serve my area, Area 44, as the archivist, you know. And there's a long history behind that with getting to that whole thing. You know, my whole service career started, you know, with the archives and the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a sponsor that read the first history book to me, you know, and it started something like this. A spark was the flare in Akron, you know, when those two guys met in the forward to the second edition in 1955, you know, and he made those pages come alive. You know, he painted a picture of me that was so real and in-depth that I just couldn't deny, you know, what was in that book anymore, and it changed me forever. So halfway through that, I started getting that mentality. I wanted to see this stuff. I wanted to touch it. I wanted to feel it, you know. And I guess you could put me in that class of a collector, because I wanted it all. I wanted it in my hands. I wanted to be touched by it all, you know. And I did that. I did it for quite a while. And I shared it with a lot of people. And I guess about a year or so after that, I found out that Area 44 actually has a History and Archives Committee. Can you imagine that? I just, there's stuff outside the home group, you know. It was really cool for me. So I show up at this archives meeting, and I'm sitting in the back with, I was trying to hide, but I couldn't because there was only three other people there. And I just paid attention, and I was listening, and I went back a couple months, and then one day the guy that was there was, he was the archives chair for 3 years. And he was just mentioning in passing, you know, I got to rotate out of this position, you know, and this, I've been doing this for too long. It's a 2-year commitment. So me not knowing much about service, I said, well, Bob, what does that position entail? And anybody who's involved in service knows what the response was. Thanks for stepping up. So I was presented to my area, you know, for the archives chair, and, you know, it pretty much started from there. I had a passion for archives from the beginning. You know, it's deep-seated in me, and no matter where else I go in AA, the history of AA is always in my mind. It's always in my body. So I started with learning traditions, learning area guidelines, and all of that confusing stuff that, you know, to me, coming from my past, it's just rules that were made to be broken. But I learned different. You know, I got a service sponsor in it, and I was taught about a lot of different things, you know. Respecting a position, respecting what it stands for, respecting what Alcoholics Anonymous is, you know. And a change, this is a story of Lester changing, and this is a story of Area 44 growing and protecting and preserving its own history and its lifeline to how it started. Soon into that, I found out about the National Archives Workshop, you know, and I found out that there were other like-minded people, you know, like myself, and I just started reaching out. And that's not my nature, you know. I always want to be a backdoor guy. I just want to sit in the back and suck it all up, and I don't want nobody to know who I am and all of that stuff. Things have changed a little bit. So I show up at this workshop, and I meet some people. I meet Guy Bob from Little Rock. He was an archivist from down there, and I meet Gail, you know. And I was full of fear, and I had about 4,000 questions on how to make this archives thing run in my area. You know, what do I need to do? How do I make this happen? Why do we keep rotating out this knowledge? Because it's a 2-year commitment. You know, and we kept rotating out our chair. And that's what our guidelines say. In our area, our History and Archives Guideline, that was my first job as the Archives Chair, to present those guidelines to the area for approval, you know. And that happened. That was pretty painless, so I was like, this is pretty cool. I don't got nothing to be scared of. keep coming back, right? So I started asking people, how did you get your area to bite into this non-rotating position of an archivist? You know, because the AA that I come from, this rotation, is a really good thing. You know, So we started, I mean, Gail helped me out, and Bob, I got copies of their guidelines from different areas, and we brought it to the History and Archives meeting, and by then we had started growing, because we got these displays, and I don't know if anybody's been to Area 44's Hospitality Suite, but I got to tell you, we got the best archives here. Next to Michelle. But we started taking those, you know, out to groups and anniversaries, and our archives committee grew. You know, people started getting interested in it. So people started having a little bit of a passion, similar to what I did, and they started showing up, and they kept coming back. You know, it was a beautiful thing. So we took all these guidelines, and we read them, and we read them, and we argued about them, and we talked about them, and we threw this page out, and we threw that page out, and, you know, we came up with our own little bit of a thing that worked for Area 44. You know, and we put this presentation together and we presented it to the area. And anybody who's involved with service at that level, if you go to your area committee meetings, you know how long discussions can last on simple matters. You know, but that's what's great about Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we talk about it until we're done talking about it, until God presents his head, or rears his head, I should say, and tells us what the right thing is to do. You know, so we made some changes to our guidelines for that archivist position, and, you know, that was a thing of the past. You know, it just came to be, and I don't know how long after that, one of the area officers approached me and asked me if I would be interested in being the archivist for Area 44. I really didn't know if I wanted to do that. You know, I was done with the archives. You know, I did what I was doing because I was serving as a committee member and doing that stuff. But I absolutely did not want to walk away from archives, you know, so I said yes. And I've been doing that ever since. And part of that job for me still today is reaching out to other people. We have an associate archivist, John, who sometimes when we sit down and talk, it's just some of the most amazing things come out of these conversations with information about the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, the history of Area 44. It's just really cool stuff. So we started doing these work days, you know, and one of the biggest things that we were getting from the groups and people in our area was, when are you guys going to tell us when our group existed? When are you guys going to come up with a group trait? You know, well, there was a lot of thinking and thought and a lot of work behind that, you know, because your sponsor told you that your group started on March the 15th, so-and-so, doesn't necessarily mean that's when your group started. You know, so we started doing these work days in our archives office, and we started taking documents one year at a time, and we started reading them.
Quiet.
We started reading them, and we would just take notes about little things, tidbits, you know, from this group to that group, and it's just like connect the dots. And over a two-year period, we had this huge tree put together, and we finally... last year or the year before at our convention, we displayed it for the first time in public, and it was, I would say it created a little bit of controversy with a lot of my sponsor told me, where's the primary document? You know, and we all firmly believe in that stuff when we were doing this stuff, that if we got the document that's got the date and the name and a place, you know, it supersedes whatever you've heard through the grapevine, even though the grapevine is a great magazine. So we grew very slowly, but we grew very effectively, you know, in our archives committee. Theron was talking about something that was really touched me a lot with. Just trying to express this the right way. With us reaching out, and how do we reach this still suffering alcoholic? Well, GSO, which wasn't called GSO in 1940-41 when the Saturday Evening Post article came out, we have letters in our archives, you know, from the office, from Bobby, that talked about this drunk in this town, and could somebody, you know, send somebody out there to talk to him and do this stuff. When we started looking at that stuff, You know, it was like, this is how AA functions. This is the real Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the roots. This is the bread and butter of Alcoholics Anonymous. One alcoholic going to find another drunk and sharing that experience, strength, and hope. And that's what I got through our archives, feeling that strength, you know, feeling that old-time AA, if you will. You know what I mean? And just carrying it into Alcoholics Anonymous today. Believing in it, living it, you know, and not giving it up, you know, not bending for, you know, some of this garbage that comes out of rehabs and the like of that. It's Alcoholics Anonymous, period, you know, and I firmly believe that in the dust jacket of the first edition, that big red dot that's on there is exactly what that meant. Alcoholics Anonymous, period, you know. This is, a lot of this is my opinion, it's my feelings, but I'll talk a little bit about, you know, that collecting thing that I started talking about a little earlier. I had all of this stuff, and you know, Area 44 is a pretty big area, but there's really not a lot of places for me to take bags of stuff and say, oh, look at this, look at this. So I was doing it with guys I sponsored as I was reading a big book with them. I was, you know, magazines and articles and all of that stuff, Oxford Group books. In my course of doing some of these traveling, you know, I was fortunate enough to meet Dr. Bob's son, spend some time with him and talk to him, and a lot of old-timers that are now passed on, Searcy from Texas. And these guys passed on a lot of good stuff to me that I retained, and I just, you know, it's part of my recovery now. I got to pass this stuff on, and I, you know, how do I best go about doing this? Well, somewhere along that chain of events, I wound up getting a book at an auction that was called The Art of Selfishness by the author David Seabury. And, you know, I got this book, and I was just, like, really cool. And it just, like, I touched it, and I read it, and I felt it, and I did all that stuff. And the dentist was like, we're alcoholics, and I know you guys can identify with this. Once you get it, you don't want it no more. You know what I mean? And it's just like, the thrill's gone, so what do you do with this stuff? But then somebody just was talking very early about the trust of archivists, your area archives with people doing donations. What's going to happen to it when I donate? Well, I had those same feelings about that stuff. What do you best do with this stuff to make sure that it's safe and preserved forever in Alcoholics Anonymous? And it doesn't go back into auctions or people trading it or doing all that stuff that goes on quite a bit right down the street. You know, I've changed a lot when it comes to that stuff. It's Alcoholics Anonymous's history, you know, and that's where it remains. So, I'm pretty sure the first time that I brought this up was in San Antonio. I pulled Gail aside, and I'd ask her a little bit about it, because inside this book, I didn't mention this, but it's part of this. You open up the book, and on the front page it said, Dr. Holbrook Smith, 855 Ardmore Avenue. And it was his signature. That was the first thing I wanted to know, and I asked Gail that, if it's possible, and she said, very much so. And I didn't have the book with me, and I didn't do nothing with it until a couple years later. I went down to Dallas to gather the Eagles, and I had made a decision, you know, that the book needed to go home, you know, and that's what I was going to do with it. So I brought it down here, and I showed Gail. And it didn't come back on a plane with me. So I gave it to Gail. It's in Dr. Bob's house now, for you, for everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous to share, you know, and be a part of and have that history. And to my knowledge, there's only one other book in there, you know, that's actually signed, that's a non-AA book. And I just thought it was pretty cool. You know, I never shared this from a podium before, what I just shared here, just because of it doesn't make me a better person, it doesn't make me a bigger person, but as an archivist, as somebody who represents Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, that's why I do this, because it's our history, it remains in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not a toy to be traded and played with, and I've become a firm believer of that. My second position in my area is I'm honored, you know, to serve Area 44 as the alternate delegate to Panel 65, you know. And with that position and coming into that position, I've learned so much about traditions and concepts, You know, and I've had a lot of talks with people in archives about that. It's like, why don't we talk about that stuff more? Why isn't this more of the archives workshop? Why isn't this part of just our life as a whole? You know, it should be. You know, why is it, what is archives? What does archives represent? It should represent the history of 36 spiritual principles, you know, and how we got to that and how that keeps us together and how in the future that will keep us together through thick, through thin, through whatever happens, you know, we'll be here. I'm really kind of honored to just be at this convention, you know, because the grapevine is pushing this stuff out there that this is the biggest one ever, that they're getting close to, I don't know, 70, 80,000 people, you know, and that's, I don't know if that's true. Don't hold me to that, but it's just stuff that I'm hearing through the grapevine. So we'll see when it's all over, said and done. We'll probably get notices from GSO. But that's my story in archives, you know, and in my future with that, I plan on doing the same thing, you know, keep on helping my area preserve the history of whatever happens in our area. You know, in 1983, which is almost 30 years after Bill Wilson turned his fellowship over to us, you know, our area finally district, you know, into where we have a firm general service structure. You know, we have a great intergroup office, and we work together, you know, with doing daily business of AA, and it's just, that's the history of our area, you know. You people sitting here today, everything that you heard here today, everything that goes on in this convention is the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And you might think that this is a little bit funny, but you're all part of it, whether you like it or not. Gotta love it. So, but again, I'd like to thank Michelle for asking me to even be part of this, and Gail, I love you. Thank you.